Now, Seth turns to the subject of the speakers.
Christian dogma speaks of the ascension of Christ, implying, of course, a vertical ascent into the heavens, and the development of the soul is often discussed in terms of direction. To progress is supposedly to ascend, while the horror of religious punishment, hell, is seen at the bottom of all things. Development is therefore considered in a one-line direction only, in Christian terms. But development unfolds in all directions. The soul is not ascending a series of stairs, each one representing a new and higher point of development. Instead, the soul stands at the center of itself, exploring, extending its capacities in all directions at once, involved in issues of creativity, each one highly legitimate. For this reason, the nature of good and evil is a highly important point. We go back to our fundamentals. You create reality through your feelings, thoughts, and mental actions. You must understand that each mental act is a reality for which you are responsible. That is what you are in this particular system of reality for. As long as you believe in a devil, for example, you will create one that is real enough for you and for the others who continue to create him. Because of the energy he is given by others, he will have a certain consciousness of his own. But such a mock devil has no power or reality to those who do not believe in his existence and who do not give him energy through their belief. He is, in other words, a superlative hallucination. Some very old religions understood the hallucinatory nature of the devil concept, but even in Egyptian times, the simpler and more distorted ideas became prevalent, particularly with the masses of people. In some ways, men in those times could not understand the concept of a god without the concept of a devil. There are no devils waiting to carry anyone off, unless you create them yourself, in which case the power resides in you and not in the mock devils. The crucifixion of Christ and the attendant drama made sense within your reality at the time. It arose into the world of physical actuality, out of the inner reality from which your deepest intuitions and insights also spring. The methods, the secret methods behind all of the religions, were meant to lead man into a realm of understanding that existed apart from the symbols and the stories, lead him into inner realizations that would take him both within and without the physical world that he knew. There are many manuscripts, still not discovered, from old monasteries, particularly in Spain, that tell of underground groups within religious orders who kept these secrets alive when other monks were copying old Latin manuscripts. There were tribes who never learned to write in Africa and Australia who also knew these secrets, and men called speakers who memorized them and spread them upward, even throughout northern portions of Europe, before the time of Christ. There have been less than 30 great speakers. The Christ entity was one. The Buddha was another. These speakers are as active when they are non-physical as when they are physical. The Christ entity had many reincarnations before the emergence of the Christ personality as known, as did the Buddha. The original source of the speaker data is the inner knowledge of the nature of reality that is within each individual. The speakers are to keep the information alive in physical terms, to see that men do not bury it within and dam it up, to bring the information to the attention of the conscious self. The Druids obtained some of their concepts from speakers. So did the Egyptians. The speaker predated the emergence of any religions that you know, and the religions of the speakers arose spontaneously in many scattered areas, then grew like wildfire from the heart of Africa and Australia. There was one separate group in an area where the Aztecs dwelled at a later date, though the land mass was somewhat different then, and some of the lower cave dwellings at times were underwater. Various bands of the speakers continued through the centuries. Because they were trained so well, the messages retained their authenticity. They believed, however, that it was wrong to set words into written form, and so did not record them. The speakers, singly, existed in your Stone Age period and were leaders. Their abilities helped the cavemen survive. There was little physical communication, however, in those days between the various speakers, and some were unaware of the existence of the others. Their message was as pure and undistorted as possible. It was for this reason, however, through the centuries, that many who heard it translated it into parables and tales. Now, strong portions of Jewish scriptures carry traces of the message of these early speakers, but even here, distortions have hidden the messages. Since consciousness forms matter, and not the other way around, then thought exists before the brain and after it. A child can think coherently before he learns vocabulary, but he cannot impress the physical universe in its terms. So this inner knowledge has always been available, but has to become physically manifest, literally made flesh. The speakers were the first to impress this inner knowledge upon the physical system, to make it physically known. Sometimes only one or two speakers were alive in several centuries. Sometimes there were many. They looked around them and knew that the world sprang from their interior reality. They told others. They knew that the seemingly solid natural objects about them were composed of many minute consciousnesses. They realized that from their own creativity they formed idea into matter, and that the stuff of matter was itself conscious and alive. They were intimately familiar with the natural rapport existing between themselves and their environment, and knew that they could alter their environment through their own acts. The speakers possess an extraordinary vividness of feeling and thought projection. They can impress others with greater import through their communications. They can move from inner to outer reality with easy ability. They know instinctively how to use symbolism. They are highly creative on an unconscious level, constantly forming psychic frameworks beneath normal consciousness that can be used both by themselves and others in dream and trance states. They often appear to others in the dream condition, and they help dreamers in the manipulation of inner reality. They form images with which the dreamers can relate, images that can be used as bridges and then as gateways into kinds of consciousness more separated from your own. The symbolism of the gods, the idea of the gods on Olympus, for example, the crossing over point at the river Styx, that kind of phenomena was originated by the speakers. The speakers were not confined in their activities to waking consciousness. In all periods of your time, they went about their duties both in the waking and sleep state. Conventional images of the Christian God and the saints may be utilized by the speakers, with all of this highly vivid. The dreamer may find himself then in a magnificent harem, or instead in a brilliantly illuminated field or sky. Some speakers confine their abilities to the dream state, and, waking, are largely unconscious of their own abilities or experience. Now, it is meaningless to call such dreams or dream places hallucinations, for they are representations of definitive, objective realities that you cannot perceive as yet in their own guise. The Egyptian religion was largely based upon the work of the speakers, and great care was given to their training. The outward manifestations given to the masses of the people became so distorted, however, that the original unity of the religion finally decayed. Each individual in his dreams has access to the information possessed by the speakers. There are adjacent states of consciousness that occur within the sleep pattern that cannot be picked up by your EEGs, that is, your scientific tracings of brain waves, adjacent corridors through which your consciousness travels. Now, this happens in every night's sleep. Two areas of activity are involved, one very passive and one acutely active. In one state, this portion of consciousness is passive, receiving information. In the next stage, it is active, as it takes part through action. The concepts given it are then vividly perceived through participation and examples. This is the most protected area of sleep. The rejuvenating characteristics enter in here, and it is during this period that the speakers act as teachers and guides. Through the ages, the speakers have taught dreamers how to manipulate in these other environments. They have taught them how to bring back information that could be used for the good of the present personality. According to the intent, present purpose, and development, an individual may be aware of these travels to varying degrees. Some have excellent recall, for example, but often misinterpret their experience because of conscious ideas. It is very possible for one dreamer who is a speaker to go to the aid of another individual who is having some difficulties in an inner reality within the dream state. The idea of guardian angels, of course, is highly connected here. A good speaker is as effective within one reality as he is within the other, creating psychic frameworks within physical reality as well as within interior environments. Many artists, poets, and musicians are speakers, translating one world in terms of another, forming psychic structures that exist in both with great vitality, structures that may be perceived from more than one reality at a time. Most dreams are like animated postcards brought back from a journey that you have returned from and largely forgotten. The speakers help you in the formation of dreams, which are indeed multidimensional artistic productions of a kind. Dreams existing in more than one reality, with effects that dissect various stages of consciousness that are real, in your terms, to both the living and the dead, and in which both the living and the dead may participate. It is for this reason that inspirations and revelations are so often a part of the dream condition. Consciousness at different levels or stages perceives different kinds of events. In order to perceive some of these, you have only to learn to change the focus of your attention from one level to another. These stages of consciousness are all a part of your own reality. A knowledge of them can be most useful. You can learn to shift gears, stand aside from your own experience, and examine it with much better perspective. You can prepare questions or problems, suggesting that they be solved for you in the sleep state. You can suggest that you will speak with distant friends, or convey important messages that you cannot convey verbally, perhaps. You can bring about reconciliations, for example, at another layer of reality, though you cannot do so in this one. You can direct the healing of your body, telling yourself that this will be accomplished by you at one of the other levels of sleep consciousness. You may ask for the aid of a speaker to give you any necessary psychological guidance that is needed to maintain health. If you have particular conscious goals, and if you are reasonably certain that they are beneficial ones, then you can suggest dreams in which they occur, for the dreams themselves will hasten their physical reality. Now, unconsciously, you do many of these things. You often go back in time, so to speak, and relive a particular event so that it has a different ending, or say things that you wish you had said. A knowledge of one state of consciousness can help you in other states. In a light trance, the meaning of dream symbols will be given if you ask for them. The symbols may then be used as methods of suggestion that will be tailored for you personally. If you discover, say, that a fountain in a dream represents refreshment, then, when you are tired or depressed, think of a fountain. The production of dreams is as sophisticated an endeavor as is the production of the objective life of a given individual. It is simply living on different terms.
And now, Seth discusses the meaning of religion and the Second Coming.
The outer world is a reflection of the inner one, though far from perfect. The inner knowledge can be compared to a book about a homeland that a traveler takes with him into a strange country. Each man is born with the yearning to make these truths real for himself, though he sees a great difference between them and the environment in which he lives. An internal drama is carried on by each individual, a psychic drama which is finally projected outward with great force upon the field of history. The birth of great religious events emerges from the interior religious drama. The drama itself is a psychological phenomenon in a way, for each physically oriented self feels thrust alone into a strange environment without knowing its origins or destination or even the reason for its own existence. Thus, you deal often with events in which men are touched by great illumination, isolated from the masses of humanity, and endowed with great powers. Periods of history that appear almost unnaturally brilliant in contrast with others. Prophets, geniuses, and kings shown in greater than human proportion. These people are chosen by others to manifest outwardly the interior truths that all intuitively know. There are many levels of significance here. On the one hand, such individuals receive their unearthly abilities and power from their fellows, contain it, exhibit it in the physical world for all to see. They play the part of the blessed inner self that actually cannot operate within physical reality uncloaked by flesh. This energy, however, is a quite valid projection from the interior self. The personality so touched by it actually does then become, in certain terms, what he seems to be. He will emerge as an eternal hero in the external religious drama, as the inner self is the eternal hero of the interior religious drama. When such a personality appears in history, then, he is intuitively recognized, for the way has long been laid, and in many cases, the prophecies announcing such an arrival have already been given. The individuals so chosen do not just happen to appear among you. They are not chosen at random. They are individuals who have taken upon themselves the responsibility for this role. After their birth, they are aware to varying degrees of their destiny, and certain trigger experiences may at times arouse their full memory. They serve quite clearly as human representatives of all that is. Now, since each individual is a part of all that is, to some extent each of you serve in that same role. In such a religious drama, however, the main personality is much more conscious of his inner knowledge. He is more aware of his abilities, far better able to use them, and exultantly familiar with his relations to all of life. Ideas of good and evil, gods and devils, salvation and damnation, are merely symbols of deeper religious values, cosmic values, if you will, that cannot be translated into physical terms. These ideas become the driving themes of these religious dramas of which I have spoken. The actors may return, time and time again, in different roles. In any given historic religious drama, the actors may have already appeared on the historic scene in your past, the prophet of today being the traitor of the past drama. Behind the actors in the dramas, there are more powerful entities who are quite beyond role-playing. The plays themselves, then, the religions that sweep across the ages, these are merely shadows, though helpful ones. Behind the frame of good and evil is a far deeper spiritual value. All religions, therefore, while trying to catch truth, must to some large degree fear it ever eluding them. The main character in a religious historical drama may or may not consciously be aware of the ways in which such information is given to him. And yet, it may seem to him that he does know, for the nature of a dogma's origin will be explained in terms that this main character can understand. The historical Jesus knew who he was, but he also knew that he was one of three personalities composing one entity. To a large extent, he shared in the memory of the other two. The third personality has not in your terms yet appeared, although his existence has been prophesied as the Second Coming. Now, these prophecies were given in terms of the current culture at that time, and therefore, while the stage has been set, the distortions are deplorable. This Christ will not come at the end of your world, as the prophecies have been maintaining. He will not come to reward the righteous and send evildoers to eternal doom. He will, however, begin a new religious drama. A certain historical continuity will be maintained. As happened once before, however, he will not be generally known for who he is. There will be no glorious proclamation to which the whole world will bow. He will return to straighten out Christianity, which will be in a shambles at the time of his arrival, and to set up a new system of thought when the world is sorely in need of one. By that time, all religions will be in severe crisis. He will undermine religious organizations, not unite them. His message will be that of the individual in relation to all that is. He will clearly state methods by which each individual can attain a state of intimate contact with his own entity, the entity, to some extent, being man's mediator with all that is. By 2075, all of this will be already accomplished. You may make a note here that Nostradamus saw the dissolution of the Roman Catholic Church as the end of the world. He could not imagine civilization without it. Hence, many of his later predictions should be read with this in mind. In your terms, and in your terms only, the coming of Christ was the second coming. In those terms, and again, this is important, in those terms only, he appeared at the time of Atlantis, but the records were destroyed and forgotten. Now, again in those terms, he is an entity who appears time and time again within your physical system, but he has been recognized on only two occasions, once in Atlantis, and once in the Christ story as it has come down to you in all of its distortions. He appears and reappears, therefore, sometimes making himself known and sometimes not. He was not one personality, as I have told you, but a highly developed entity, sometimes appearing as a fragment of himself. In your terms, he eternally weaves himself within the fabric of your time and space, born again and again into the world of flesh, being a part of it while also independent of it, even as you are all a part of it, but independent of it. The third historical personage, already born in your terms, and a portion of the entire Christ personality, had superior energy and power and great organizing abilities. But it was the errors that he made unwittingly that perpetuated some dangerous distortions. The records of that historical period are scattered and contradictory. The man, historically now, was Paul or Saul. It was given to him to set up a framework. But it was to be a framework of ideas, not of regulations, of men, not of groups. Here he fell down, and he will return as the third personality in your future. Paul tried to deny knowing who he was until his experience with conversion. Allegorically, he represented a warring faction of the self that fights against his own knowledge and is oriented in a highly physical manner. It seemed he went from one extreme to another, being against Christ and then for him. But the inner vehemence was always present, the inner fire, and the recognition that he tried for so long to hide. His was the portion that was to deal with physical reality and manipulation, and so these qualities were strong in him. To some extent, they overruled him. When the historical Christ died, Paul was to implement the spiritual ideas in physical terms, to carry on. In so doing, however, he grew the seeds of an organization that would smother the ideas. He lingered after Christ, just as John the Baptist came before. Together, the three span some time period, you see. John and the historical Christ each performed their roles and were satisfied that they had done so. Paul alone was left at the end unsatisfied, and so it is about his personality that the future Christ will form. The entity of which these personalities are part, that entity, which you may call the Christ entity, was aware of these issues. The earthly personalities were not aware of them, although in periods of trance and exaltation, much was made known to them. Paul also represented the militant nature of man that had to be taken into consideration in line with man's development at the time. That militant quality in man will completely change in nature and be dispensed with as you know it when the next Christ personality emerges. It is therefore appropriate that Paul be present. In the next century, the inner nature of man, with these developments, will free itself from many constraints that have bound it. A new era will indeed begin, not a heaven on earth, but a far more sane and just world, in which man is far more aware of his relationship with his planet and of his freedom within time. The third personality of Christ will indeed be known as a great psychic, for it is he who will teach humanity to use those inner senses that alone make true spirituality possible. Slayers and victims will change roles as reincarnational memories rise to the surface of consciousness. Through the development of these abilities, the sacredness of all life will be intimately recognized and appreciated. An open-ended consciousness will feel its connections with all other living beings. The continuity of consciousness will become apparent. Man's experience will be so extended that to you the race will seem to have changed into another. This does not mean there will not be problems. It does mean that man will have far greater resources at his command. It also presupposes a richer and far more diverse social framework. Men and women will find themselves relating to their brethren, not only as the people that they are, but as the people that they were. Now, some final words, a goodbye, and an introduction. The soul knows itself and is not confused by terms or definitions. Through showing you the nature of my own reality, I hope to teach you the nature of your own. You are not bound to any category or corner of existence. Your reality cannot be measured any more than mine. I hope to illustrate the function of consciousness and personality through speaking these words and enlarging your concepts. The soul is open-ended. It is not a closed spiritual or psychic system. I have tried to show you that the soul is not a separate, apart-from-you thing. it is no more divorced from you than God is. There is no need to create a separate God who exists outside of your universe and separate from it, nor is there any need to think of a soul as some distant entity. God, or all that is intimately a part of you. His energy forms your identity, and your soul is a part of you in the same manner. The answers to the nature of reality, the intimate knowledge of all that is that you all seek, is within your present experience. It will not be found outside of yourselves, but through an inner journey into yourself, and through the world you know. All of existence and consciousness is interwoven. Only when you think of the soul as something different, separate, and therefore closed, are you led to consider a separate God, a personality that seems to be apart from creation. You are not fated to dissolve into all that is. The aspects of your personality, as you presently understand them, will be retained. All that is the creator of individuality, not the means of its destruction. My own previous personalities are not dissolved into me any more than your past personalities. All are living and vital. All go their own way. Your future personalities are as real as your past ones. After a while, this will no longer concern you. Out of the reincarnational framework, there is no death as you think of it. Personality changes, whether it is within a body or outside of it, so you will change after death as you change before it. In those terms, it is ridiculous to insist upon remaining as you are now, after death. It is the same as a child saying, "I am going to grow up, but I am never going to change the ideas that I have now." The multidimensional qualities of the psyche allow it to experience an endless realm of dimensions. Experience in one dimension in no way negates existence in another. You have been trying to squeeze the soul into tight concepts of the nature of existence, making it follow your limited beliefs. The door to the soul is open, and it leads to all the dimensions of experience. If you think, however, that the self as you know it is the end or summation of yourself, then you also imagine your soul to be a limited entity, bounded by its present ventures in one life alone, to be judged accordingly after death on the performance of a few paltry years. In many ways, this is a cozy concept, though to some it can be quite frightening with its connotations of eternal damnation. It is far too tidy an idea, however, to hint at the rich embellishments that are at the heart of divine creativity. The soul stands both within and without the fabric of physical life as you know it. You are not separated from the animals and the rest of existence by virtue of possessing an eternal inner consciousness. Such a consciousness is present within all living beings and in all forms. I titled this section, A Goodbye and an Introduction. The goodbye is my own, since I am now coming to a close. The introduction applies to each of you, for I hope that you will now be able to meet yourself face to face with a greater understanding of who and what you are. I would like, therefore, to introduce you to yourself. You will not find yourself by running from teacher to teacher, from book to book. You will not meet yourself through following any particular specialized method of meditation. Only by looking quietly within the self that you know can your own reality be experienced. With those connections that exist between the present or immediate self and the inner identity that is multidimensional. There must be a willingness, an acquiescence, a desire. If you do not take the time to examine your own subjective states, then you cannot complain if so many answers seem to elude you. You cannot throw the burden of proof upon another or expect a man or teacher to prove to you the validity of your own existence. Such a procedure is bound to lead you into one subjective trap after another. As you listen to these words, the doorways within are open. You have only to experience the moment as you know it as fully as possible, as it exists physically within the room or outside in the streets of the city in which you live. Imagine the experience present in one moment of time over the globe, then try to appreciate the subjective experience of your own that exists in the moment and yet escapes it, and this multiplied by each living individual. This exercise alone will open your perceptions, increase your awareness, and automatically expand your appreciation of your own nature. the you, who is capable of such expansion, must be a far more creative and multidimensional personality than you earlier imagined. Each of you should, in one way or another, sense his own vitality in a way quite new to him, and find avenues of expansion opening within himself of which he was earlier unaware. The very nature of these words, the method of their creation and delivery, in themselves should clearly point out the fact that human personality has far more abilities than those usually ascribed to it. By now you should understand that all personalities are not physically materialized. As this was conceived and written by a non-physical personality and then made physical, so do each of you have access to greater abilities and methods of communication than those usually accepted. I hope that in one way or another, my words have served to give each of you an introduction to the inner, multidimensional identity that is your own. And that, my dear friend, is the end. And we are finished.